it is Monday, May 4th, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Alana Hill. South Korea's June 3rd local elections are just a month away, with the races shaping up as the first major test of President Lee Jae-myung's administration. More on that in News Briefing. The UAE has left OPEC after 60 years, raising questions about oil prices and global energy stability amid the Iran war. On In Depth, we'll discuss what it means for South Korea, as well as review the latest economic data. And on Sports Roundup, we look at an upcoming visit by a North Korean women's football club, big matches for Korean stars abroad, and an underdog KBL finals matchup. Let's start Korea 24 right now. With the June 3rd local elections just a month away, candidate lineups have largely been finalised nationwide. As the first nationwide polls under President Lee Jae-myung, they are expected to determine whether the administration's political momentum builds or fades away. Both the ruling and opposition parties are gearing up for an all-out battle, with parliamentary by-elections also drawing attention to what some view as a mini-general election. For more on the upcoming elections and other major headlines of the day, we have now in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World English News Service, Kim In-kyung. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Alana.
In-kyung, we're exactly 1 month out from the June 3rd local elections and the chessboard is finally set. Can you tell us about the key battlegrounds?
Sure. Seoul stands out as the crown jewel, with its mayor frequently emerging as a presidential contender. In the capital city, you have the DP's Jeong Won-ho, the former chief of Seongdong District, who has President Lee's full backing. Jeong is trying to unseat the People Power Party's Oh Se-hoon, who is looking for a record-breaking fifth term. In Incheon, Park Chan-dae, a pro-Lee heavyweight, is taking on incumbent Yoo Jung-bok from the PPP. In the southern port city of Busan, the DP has put forward Jeon Jae-soo, the Lee administration's first oceans minister. He's up against incumbent Park Hyung-jun from the PPP. In the conservative stronghold of Daegu, former Prime Minister Kim Bok-yeom is running for the DP, facing the PPP's Choo Kyung-ho, a former deputy prime minister.
And walk us through the main battlegrounds in the parliamentary by-elections.
Sure. Here, the DP is aiming to defend 13 of the 14 contested seats, while the PPP is seeking to reclaim lost ground. Key battlegrounds include Busan's Bukgu-gap district and the city of Pyeongtaek in Gyeonggi province, where competitive races are unfolding. In Bukgu-gap, the latest poll shows a tight race between the DP's Ha Jong-woo and former PPP chief turned independent Han Dong-un. The PPP is expected to nominate Bang Min-sik in this district.
So one issue that the PPP is using to gain ground in the elections is the Democratic Party's push for another special counsel investigation into the previous administration. In-kyung, can you explain?
Sure. The DP introduced a bill on Thursday to appoint a special counsel to investigate allegations that prosecutors under former President Yoon Suk-yeol pursued politically motivated indictments against Lee. Lee is accused of involvement in multiple land corruption cases and of facilitating unauthorized money transfers to North Korea. Court trials have been paused since his inauguration. If the bill passes, it would effectively empower the special counsel to cancel indictment against the president.
Now, the president did weigh in on the matter today. What did he say?
According to Senior Presidential Secretary for Political Affairs Hong Hik-pyo, he is urging the DP to move with caution regarding the bill.
So does that mean that the president doesn't support it?
No, the president says it's essential. According to Hong, the president believes uncovering the truth and ensuring justice via independent counsel is necessary, but is asking the DP to proceed more slowly. He wants them to invite public opinion and have sufficient deliberations before pulling the trigger. The DP leadership initially said it would push to pass the bill by the end of this month, but this could mean the bill will be passed after the elections to limit its influence on the campaign.
And what is the opposition's position on the bill?
PPP chief Chang Dong-hyuk said Monday that a law designed for a single individual would amount to violence and a crime. He said the proposed probe is unconstitutional and framed the upcoming elections as a vote to defend the democratic and constitutional order.
Well, let's move from the choppy waters of the National Assembly to international waters. President Donald Trump says the United States will help free ships that have been stranded in the Strait of Hormuz since the start of the war in Iran. In-kyung, can you tell us more?
Well, Trump said the operation dubbed Project Freedom would start on Monday. In a social media post on Sunday, Trump said the focus is on getting civilian ships from countries not affiliated with the conflict out of the contested waterway safely so they can get on with their business. He called the campaign a humanitarian gesture, saying many ships are running low on food and everything else needed for crews to stay on board in a healthy and sanitary manner.
Trump also said his representatives were having very positive discussions with Iran, suggesting coordination with Tehran. Are we hearing the same from Iran?
No, it doesn't look like it. Iran warned that any American interference in the Strait of Hormuz would be considered a breach of the Mideast ceasefire. Ebrahim Azizi, the head of the Iranian parliament's National Security Commission, said in a social media post that the Strait of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf would not be managed by what he called Trump's delusional posts. Iranian officials have asserted that they control the straits and ships not affiliated with the United States or Israel can pass if they pay a toll.
Well, among the thousands waiting to escape the besieged waterway are 26 South Korean ships, including 9 tankers. What can you tell us?
Seoul says it is maintaining close communication with the ships and that the situation for the crews on board remains stable. The ships are on standby in waters near Dubai and Abu Dhabi, waiting to depart, but remains unclear when that'll be possible.
In other headlines, the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index surged more than 5% on Monday, hitting another record high and coming close to the 7,000 mark. What happened on the KOSPI?
The index jumped 5.12% to end at 6,936.99. Tech heavyweights led the rally. Samsung Electronics rose more than 5%, while SK Hynix climbed more than 12%. SK Hynix topped 1.4 billion won, or about $950 a share, and saw its market capitalization exceed 1 quadrillion won for the first time.
Moving on, North Korea's Naegohyang Women's FC will visit South Korea to face off against Suwon FC Women in the 2025-2026 Asian Football Confederation Women's Champions League semifinals. Ingeong, what can you tell us about this match?
The Korea Football Association said on Monday that plans for the visit have been finalized. It'll be the first visit by North Korean athletes since the International Table Tennis Federation's World Tour Grand Finals, hosted by Incheon in December 2018. The semifinal game between Suwon FC Women and the Naegohyang Women's FC is scheduled to take place at the Suwon Sports Complex starting at 7 p.m. on May 20th.
Now, sports have often served as a catalyst at key moments in inter-Korean relations. Although it's not direct inter-Korean engagement between the authorities, some see this event as an opportunity for dialogue potentially to resume. Did the Unification Ministry have anything to say about this event?
A Unification Ministry official said the government views the event both as an international match and a club competition. The official said direct government involvement will be limited. The ministry said its priority is to ensure the event proceeds smoothly.
Finally for today, National Human Rights Commission Chair An Chang-ho says extreme early private education is a serious violation of children's rights. Ingeong, give us more on An's remarks.
Sure. An made the remark in a statement released Monday, one day ahead of South Korea's 104th Children's Day. He cited the results of a UNICEF survey that found that out of 36 countries, including members of the OECD and members of the European Union, South Korea ranked 4th in children's academic skills, but 34th in children's mental health. An said the figures demonstrate that South Korean children may be ahead in competition, but do not feel sufficiently safe or stable in their lives. The commission chief said excessive early learning deprives children of time for play, rest, and self-expression, while hampering healthy growth and development. An stressed that a child's growth must be nurtured by time being cherished, not by the pace of competition.
And that's where we'll wrap up today's news briefing. Thanks so much, Ingeong, for bringing us all the headlines.
Thanks, Alana.
Pianist Kim Se-hyun. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
On May 1st, the United Arab Emirates ended its 60-year membership in the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, along with the wider group of partners known as OPEC Plus. In a statement carried by state media, the UAE said the decision reflects its long-term strategic and economic vision and evolving energy profile. But the move is widely seen as a setback for the oil producers group, which plays a major role in managing global supply and influencing crude prices. On today's weekly economy review, we'll look at why the UAE is stepping away and what it could mean for global energy markets, and then turn to the latest data here at home, showing South Korea's industrial output, retail sales and facility investment all rising in March from a month earlier. To do that, we're joined today on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Professor Yang, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with a decision that has surprised many surprised energy markets and raised questions about OPEC's future. Professor Yang, the UAE's departure comes, of course, at an already volatile moment with the US-Israel war with Iran adding new pressure to global energy supplies and triggering the biggest loss of oil supply on record. That's according to the World Bank. Professor, how do you view the UAE's exit and what is Abu Dhabi trying to achieve by stepping away?
Okay, well, the power of OPEC has been weakening for quite some time, but at a very, very slow pace. One of the reasons is that other countries like Russia, Mexico, and even the United States have become bigger oil producers, and some of them belong in OPEC Plus, some of them do not, but they do not belong in OPEC themselves. The actual share of production by OPEC members have been falling. And since the two oil crises in the 1970s and since the rise of renewable power, the use of oil has been shrinking. So that accounts for some of the loss of power by OPEC. But for UAE in particular, UAE was one of the biggest victims of Iran's attack. Dubai itself was attacked. Some of the hotels were attacked because U.S. soldiers were staying there. And out of their production capacity was attacked by Iran. So they're going to have a lot of repairs that are coming soon. And then they have been trying to move out of being just an oil producer and become a regional hub, financial hub centered in Dubai. But since Dubai was attacked, their plans for having the regional financial hub was set back as well. Because these Middle East countries, their government revenues, a lot of their infrastructure investment depends on revenues from oil. UAE, as the fourth largest producer of oil in OPEC, wanted, I think, to have a bit more freedom. OPEC always had this type of problem in the past. The smaller countries wanted a bigger share of the profits, but Saudi Arabia, being the largest producer, Saudi Arabia acted to keep those members in check. So Saudi Arabia often pressured these other countries to limit their supply. And UAE, I think, did not want to be under as much pressure as a member of OPEC. They wanted more freedom to sell more, to get more revenues so they can affect these repairs. They're still cut off from international trade. They're geographically trapped because they're inside the Strait of Hormuz. But once the strait becomes open again, I think they're going to try to get a lot of revenue so that they can affect these repairs and try to repair their reputation to Dubai and elsewhere. Now, having said that, though, they also said that they are open to cooperation. They do not believe in unlimited competition. So they are leaving room open to cooperate with OPEC, Saudi Arabia, on prices of oil. UAE doesn't want the price of oil to get too low either. Mm-hmm. So they are opening some channels for cooperation, but I think they wanted much more flexibility than being an OPEC member can give them.
Now, the UAE has played an influential role in OPEC's decisions over nearly six decades, and its exit's being viewed as a huge blow for the oil producers group, some describing it as the beginning of the end for OPEC. Professor, you've just mentioned OPEC's waning influence, you know, over the last however many years, perhaps at a slower rate. How big of a blow could this be for OPEC, in your opinion? You know, is this a final blow, perhaps?
I don't think so. It's still in the oil producers' interest to cooperate, to try to keep the prices relatively high, even though it may not be perfect cooperation. So OPEC and OPEC Plus members will still cooperate to try to keep the prices relatively high, but it does say that the control that OPEC countries had in the past are weakening. And it's going to get, I think, a bit worse because all these Middle East countries, they're going to need more revenues to repair the damage that was done by Iran during the war, and also to make up for revenues that they lost during the closing of the Strait of Hormuz. But it's not in their interest to get into complete competition and lower the price of oil to perfectly competitive levels. Mm-hmm. Having said that, though, I think the weakening of the cooperation does mean that it is a somewhat of a pressure for prices to go downward because all these countries will need revenues once the war is over. But it will not mean the destruction of cooperation or destruction of OPEC. But it does mean further weakening of some of the powers.
Let's speak a bit more about oil prices. Looking ahead, how could this withdrawal from OPEC by the UAE impact oil prices, and what should South Korea be watching out for?
Well, in the short run, it's not going to have that much effect at all because UAE's exports are being blocked by the blocking of the Strait of Hormuz. So it's not going to affect all that much in the short run. Once it does open up, though, the oil prices may fall a little bit, but it's still expected to remain relatively high because some of the supply will not be made up very quickly. Some of the production facilities have to be restarted. It'll take at least a month or two to restart all the production. It may take 6 months to 2 years to restart, reconstruct some of the damaged production facilities. But it does mean that there will be maybe smattering more competition, so prices will fall maybe slightly faster than it would have, and it will get slightly lower than where it could be. But still, I don't expect this to be a revolutionary change in oil markets.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us from global energy risks to how much of that pressure is showing up here at home. South Korea's industrial output, retail sales and facility investment all rose in March despite the war in Iran, marking the first time since last September that all three indicators posted on-month growth. According to the data from the Ministry of Data and Statistics, industrial production edged up 0.3% from the previous month in March. Retail sales, a gauge of private spending, rose 1.8%, while facility investment also gained 1.5%. Professor, judging by those figures, it seems like the war in Iran has had a somewhat limited effect on the South Korean economy. What's your take on the latest data?
I think that's exactly right. Remember, even though the war started on February 28th, the oil delivery continued until fairly late in March. I believe the last ship from the Strait of Hormuz came in on March 20th. So for most of March, you had regular deliveries of oil. It wasn't really disrupted. Now, the prices went up because they were expecting shortages in the future. But because the oil was delivered more or less regularly, I don't think it would have affected production at all. And production was helped by really strong continuing demand for semiconductors, international demand, especially from the United States. Mm-hmm. So we were worried about automobiles, but automobiles did better than expected, especially hybrid and electric vehicles. So production should not have been affected all that much. And then we heard about some shortages in plastic products, plastic bags, trash bags, NAFTA, which is the raw material for plastics. But we're not quite sure whether this is because there were actual supply shortages or whether because people were hoarding. Mm-hmm. They increased demand because they expected the price of these goods to go up in the future. If it was hoarding, then that meant that the demand was stronger than usual, and that actually shows up as a strength in retail sales. So if you look at the retail sales, consumption rose by 1.8%. It mostly rose durables, 9.8% rise in durable consumption, communications equipment, computers, home appliances. So some of these products are products which were expected to rise in prices in the near future, or perhaps encounter shortages, not only because of the Iran war, but because shortages of semiconductors, especially memory semiconductors, which are all being bought by all these large AI companies. Mm-hmm. So hoarding may explain some of the strong rise in consumption. Investment, business and facilities investment rose by 1.5%. And that was a bit unusual circumstances. A lot of it was accounted for by airlines making purchases of airplanes. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be more or less a one-time only event. But still, those kind of events did raise all the indicators. So we had a triple whammy in March, consumption, in facilities investment, and production all rose.
And do you expect positive trends in indicators like industrial output, retail sales, and facility investment in the coming months?
Well, a lot of people do. After Korea recorded a higher than expected first quarter growth a couple of weeks ago, all the research institutions have started to revise Korea's annual growth rates upwards, estimates upwards. So before the Iran war, it centered around perhaps 1.9%. When those Iran wars started, it came in at a wide dispersion between 1.0% to 1.9%. But now these investment banks and research institutions are raising those estimates to maybe about 2.3 to 2.7% level. So basically the answer is no one's really sure exactly what's going to happen this year. It will depend a lot on, first of all, how long the Iran war continues. If we actually experience shortages of raw material, then I expect growth rate closer to maybe 1.0 to 1.5%. But we haven't really been hit with shortages so far. Mm-hmm. It's March is over, April is over, but there has been less shortages than we feared, though the prices have risen. So if this continues, and secondly, if the strong demand for semiconductors continue, then higher than 2% growth is certainly possible. On the other hand, if there are supply shortages, and if because of the war or because of some other reason the demand for semiconductor collapses, then I think we'll be lucky to have just 1.0% growth.
So ultimately a lot riding on how long the conflict in Iran does continue and, of course, as usual, demand for semiconductors. Professor, before we let you go, there is one more issue that I want to touch upon. Samsung Electronics Labour Union has threatened to launch an 18-day general strike starting May 21st. They're demanding higher bonuses in proportion to the company's record high revenue. Now, the Labour Union has estimated that if this strike goes ahead and lasts for 18 days, the company is expected to suffer up to 30 trillion won in losses. This is approximately $20 billion. Labour management negotiations have been at a stalemate since the union suspended talks in March. Professor, what are your thoughts on the possible losses that this strike could inflict on the company? And how might the strike affect the semiconductor industry?
Okay, well, this is what you do in a strike. The biggest tool that you have in a strike is that the company can suffer big losses. Mm. And that becomes a tool for the labor unions to get negotiating leverage. So that's not unusual per se. What is unusual, though, is that, first of all, Korea is known for really bad union management labor relations. And this is just another counterpoint to that. One problem is that, well, more and more we seem to be taking labor contract as a suggestion rather than a contract. What I mean by that is, well, if you talk about textbook economics, then labor gets a steady paycheck. They do not, even if the company does not do well, they're supposed to get that steady paycheck, and so they're exempted from risk. Now, the company's owners, the stock owners, the capital side, they take the risk, they take the losses when the business is not good. But when the business is doing well, they're supposed to get all the all or most of the profit. Now, it seems like a lot of cases, the unions are saying, well, we don't want to take any losses, but if we there are profits, we're going to take a lot of it. And that sort of creates sort of a moral hazard on the part of unions, because they're saying that we won't participate in the risk, but we will participate in the gains. So gains are ours, but losses are yours. That creates a really distorted incentive structure.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be laid out in a labor contract where, well, sometimes you do want to have bonuses paid out to give labor incentive to work harder. But what they seem to be doing right now is saying that, well, we don't care about what the labor contract says. We just want a lot of a piece of that pie. And we not only we seeing that in the unions, but also some politicians. Well, they're saying that because Hynix made so much money, some of that Hynix profit should go to the public,
mm-hmm.
Which if you think about market economy, that's not what a market economy is supposed to do. So we seem to be losing what a market economy does, why labor takes wages instead of a piece of the company, why capitalists invest. We seem to be sort of, instead of drawing clear lines, we seem to be sort of mixing it all up. And that is creating, I think, a really disturbing environment for labor, capital, not just their relationship, but all kinds of incentives that companies will have to invest or labor has to negotiate in good faith over what their job, what their pay is going to be and what kind of job security they're going to have and how much job opportunities will there be in the future.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. Economics Professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea, thank you as always for joining us.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 stock market update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index spiked 338.12 points, or 5.12% on Monday, to close at 6,936.99. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ gained 21.39 points, or 1.79%, to close at 1,213.74. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Elena.
Daniel, what's our starting point today?
The suspects who assaulted and caused the death of film director Kim Chang-min have been detained, and this comes long after the deadly incident occurred last October.
Right, so as you said, this occurred last October. This case has drawn renewed attention now that the suspects have been detained. But before we get into the latest developments, can you walk us through what actually happened when director Kim was assaulted?
Well, late indie film director Kim Chang-min, who won Best Director at the 2016 Police Human Rights Film Festival, was initially reported to have died on November 7th after collapsing from a cerebral hemorrhage last October. but it was belatedly revealed by his bereaved family that he actually died from assault. At around 1 a.m. on October 20th, 2025, Kim was visiting a restaurant in Guri, Gyeonggi Province with his son who has developmental disability. He was reportedly gotten into an argument with other customers apparently due to noise and then was assaulted. Director Kim, who lost consciousness, was taken to a hospital but ultimately died. The assault scene was captured on CCTV inside and outside of that restaurant.
It's a deeply troubling account, and the case has obviously raised questions, serious questions, about why the circumstances of his death only came to light later. Now that the court has issued detention warrants for the suspects, what's the latest developments?
On Monday, the Namyangju branch of Ujangbu District Court issued the warrant for the two suspects who are accused of causing death by injury after a review held in the morning, citing risk of fleeing and destroying evidence. Prior to this decision, on the 15th of last month, a search and seizure of the suspects' homes were conducted, and they were summoned for questioning for about 10 hours on the 24th.
Now, that timeline, of course, still does raise questions about why this process took so long. Had the prosecution sought detention warrants before this latest court decision?
Well, the court initially dismissed warrant requests for the assault suspects on the grounds that the suspects had a fixed residence and that there was no concern about destruction of evidence. After the police handed the case over to the prosecution last week without detaining the suspects, investigators found evidence including one of the suspects saying that he thinks he was so infuriated that he could only think about killing Kim at the time, as well as evidence showing the suspects' attempt to delete the restaurant's CCTV footage. Investigators also found that cell phone forensics showed information being deleted before submission.
Right, so it sounds like the case took a real turn once investigators found possible evidence, of course, of intent and alleged attempts to delete that key footage. Let's move on to our next story now.
We introduced the annual Han River Nap competition last week. Now that the event was held on Saturday and a champion crowned, we take you closer to the action.
Okay, first of all, fill us in on the competition itself.
The Power Nap Contest started at 3 p.m. Saturday along a park by the Han River. Participants put on their eye masks. There were challenging obstacles like mosquito buzzing sounds and some tickling. But through it all, many firmly laid their ground. Officials went around measuring heart rates to make sure they had a stable reading, which is an indicator of deep, peaceful sleep.
Tell us about some of the standout participants.
Colorful outfits were encouraged, and one participant won the Best Dress Award by dressing up in a koala outfit. Here's what some participants had to say.
I usually don't sleep well. I have trouble falling asleep, and I'm a light sleeper. Koalas are famous for their deep slumber, so I came dressed as one hoping to borrow a little of their magic.
I'm an office worker. I commute every day, and sometimes I work late. I just got back from a business trip and done a lot of driving, so I was completely drained. So when I saw this power nap contest, I was determined to sleep to fully recharge.
As for the winner, it seems experience and wisdom trumped youthful energy, as the crown champion was a man in his 80s. However, little is revealed about this mysterious winner.
Well, congratulations to the winner. But beyond the novelty and the fun of it, Daniel, what message were organizers hoping to send with this event?
So this is already the third consecutive year this competition is being held, and it underscores a chronic issue. Data shows South Korea is one of the most overworked and sleep-deprived nations among Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development members. People have some of the fewest sleep hours here. At an average of slightly under 7 hours, that's about 18% below the OECD average. Here's what the organizer of the contest had to say.
Apparently, people are sleeping worse and worse these days, but a power nap, even just a short one during the day, can do wonders. That's what inspired this event. Participants get to nap for about an hour and a half, and we're hoping they'll come out of it feeling recharged.
A fun event, but also I think a pretty relatable one, especially as you said, Daniel, in a country where so many people are short on sleep. Let's wrap things up now with our final story of the day.
It is about the Dongse Trail, the east-west trail, set to open to the public early next year. Spanning 849 kilometers, it is the country's first coast-to-coast hiking route designed for long-distance backpacking, requiring weeks or even months to complete. It has made waves online as government officials visit the site to inspect the progress of preparations over the weekend.
Okay, get us better acquainted with this trail. What can visitors look forward to when it does open?
It stretches across the country's central region from Anmyeon Island in Taean County, South Chungcheong Province, all the way to Mangyangjeong Pavilion in Uljin County, North Gyeongsang Province. The Jeju Olde Trail, which circles Jeju Island, has already played a key role in boosting Korea's global tourism appeal and maintained steady popularity since its launch in 2007. And the Dongse Trail is expected to be an even bigger attraction, with some experts even comparing the Korean Trail to the Camino de Santiago in Spain, a global attraction for soul-searching trail hikers, rather.
Okay, well, speaking of global tourism, what has the response been from outside of Korea regarding the Dongse Trail?
Even before the official opening, anticipation for the Dongse Trail has been growing overseas. Back in January, the New York Times included in its 52 places to go in 2026. In February, the BBC introduced it as among the world's five most anticipated hiking trails of 2026. One Korean researcher pointed out that in 2024, mountains and trails attracted over 885,000 foreign visitors, which is a huge boost from fewer than 49,000 back in 2021. So Korea can anticipate even further boost to these figures once the Dongse Trail opens.
Absolutely. Fill us in on the kind of impact the trail will have, not just in tourism in general, but also for regional economies.
Some 726 kilometers of the trail are situated in forests under municipal control. More than half of the entire path spread across townships witnessing population decline. The Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs and the Korea Forest Service anticipate the trail will help depopulating towns become more economically sustainable with an influx of tourists. From making souvenir goods for visitors to providing services related to operating the trail, such as on-site management and the introduction of local cultural assets, there will be jobs created, which will help immensely in reviving such towns.
And that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thanks so much, Daniel, for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
My name is Kanoa Hijay Palmiano, winner of the junior and open men's categories at the Asian Surfing Championship. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
For Sports Roundup, your weekly look at all the action, from the big wins and tough losses to the stories making headlines both on and off the field. And joining us now on the line to help us do that, we have our regular contributor, sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News Agency. Ji-ho, great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
We're going to kick things off today with some football news. A North Korean women's club will travel to South Korea later this month to play at a regional tournament. Now, we briefly touched on this story already in our news briefing segment, but Ji-ho, just tell us more about this somewhat unusual development.
Yeah, so it will be Naegohyang Women's FC crossing the border to visit Suwon, which is just south of Seoul, to take on Suwon FC Women in the semifinals of the Asian Football Confederation AFC Women's Champions League. It will be 7 p.m. on May the 20th at Suwon Stadium. The winner goes on to the final, which will be played 3 days later, May the 23rd at 2 p.m. Now, we've got Melbourne City FC of Australia and Nippon TV Tokyo Verde Bellezza of Japan in the other semifinal match at 2 p.m. on May the 20th. So we've got the prime time all Korean match that the particular evening, May the 20th. So a big event, obviously. It's not often that we get to see a North Korean sports team in action on South Korean soil. In fact, this is the first time that a North Korean women's football club we were playing on South Korean soil. We've had North Korean women's national teams actually having played here, at, you know, back at 2014 Asian Games in Incheon. Korea hosted East Asian Football Federation's Women's Championship. North Korea actually played in a couple of them and also withdrew from a couple of them when South Korea hosted those tournaments. So for a club to come down here to play, like I said, is you know, not often that we get to see that development here. Now, with Naegu-hyang, they actually defeated Suwon FC Women 3-0 in the group stage of this tournament, AFC Champions League, back in November last year. And you know, this is a very strong team. You know, they've got several members from the teams that won the 2024 FIFA Women's Under 20 World Cup and also last year's Women's Under 17 World Cup. So, you know, they've got a really good foundation in North Korea with the national team programs, especially on the women's football side. And then some of the members, I would say about a handful of members of those two championship teams are playing for Naegu-hyang right now. So, you know, their senior women's national team, they're number 11 in the world, 8 spots above South Korea, even though North Korea don't really play a lot. You know, they don't really go around travel around the world to play friendlies and whatnot, but they're still number 11 in the world and they've got a really good track record against South Korean national team. So, I think Naegu-hyang will be favored, in this upcoming match against Suwon, but, you know, there's going to be some other factors in play, I would think. You know, there's going to be a lot of media attention, a lot of, I would say even media circus around this matchup. So there could be some distractions, I think, for North Korean players playing here for the first time.
Definitely one to watch, you know, as you said, Jiho, not just for the football, but also for the significance of a North Korean club playing on South Korean soil. And as you said, maybe a lot of our listeners might not be aware, but the North Korean women's soccer team really are quite strong. So it will definitely make for an interesting match. Staying with football, the defending K-League 1 champions, Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors, have climbed to second place after winning their second straight match over the weekend. Gio, give us the latest in the top domestic league.
Sure. Well, Jeonbuk blanked Jeju SK FC 2-0 on Saturday at home to improve to 18 points. They've got 5 wins, 3 draws and 3 losses, now within 7 points of the league-leading FC Seoul, who actually lost to Kim Chan Sangmo FC on the same day. Kim Jung-gyo scored his first goal of the season for Jeonbuk in this victory. And FC Seoul, they lost to Kim Chan 3-2, giving up 3 goals in a match for the first time this season. In 10 previous matches, they had conceded only 6 goals combined. And Ulsan HDFC fell from second place to third place in the tables after losing to Pohang Steelers 1-0 in their East Coast Derby, first one of the season. Pohang cracked the top 6 with 15 points thanks to Cho Sang-hyuk's last-gap goal in the narrow victory. Daejeon Hana Citizen FC, meanwhile, defeated Gwangju FC 5-0. They've scored 9 goals in the past 2 matches. Right now, they're in 5th place with 15 points.
Plenty of movement in the K-League table there. And for fans of Korean national team stars, there is so much to look forward to this week. We could have a Korean derby between Lee Kang-in of PSG and Kim Min-jae of Bayern Munich in the semi-finals of the UEFA Champions League. Not to mention LAFC and their Korean superstar Son Heung-min will try to reach the final of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Jiho, let's preview these matches.
Yeah, so neither Lee Kang-in nor Kim Min-jae actually played in the opening leg of the UEFA Champions League semifinals last week. PSG won that match 5-4 in Paris. The second leg will be in Munich, 4 a.m. Thursday in Korean time. PSG are the defending champions. Lee Kang-in did not play in last year's final, but still became just the second Korean player after former Man United player Park Ji-sung to win a Champions League title. Lee Kang-in did play in some of the earlier matches during the knockout stage and group stage, but did not take the field in the final. Now, Kim Min-jae, he's trying to win his first UEFA Champions League title with the German giants Bayern Munich. Both players have had, you know, their roles diminished over the past few months, but hopefully they will see some action in the second leg. Now, with Son Heung-min, Sony, and LAFC, They're going to be visiting Deportivo Toluca FC in Mexico at 10:30 a.m. Thursday hour time for the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. LAFC won the first leg 2-1 with Son assisting both goals. He only played about 45 minutes off the bench in the latest MLS Major League Soccer match on Saturday, so he should be rested and ready to go against Toluca in the second leg.
So definitely a big week for Korean stars abroad with Lee and Kim, you know, both hoping to get off the bench in Munich. And of course, Sonny heading to Toluca, rested, ready, and already serving up assists for LAFC. Let's move on to basketball now. The Korean Basketball League finals will tip off Tuesday, and whoever wins the title is going to make history. Give us the preview of the matchup.
Yeah, this is a matchup that I don't think a lot of people really predicted. It's going to be number 5 seed, Goyang Sona Sky Gunners, against number 6 seed, Busan KCCEG. So the two worst seeds to lowest seeds in the playoffs meeting in the final. In fact, this is the first time ever that the two lowest seeds in the playoffs would clash in the final for the title. Goyang Sona, they're the second number 5 seed to reach the finals. KCC were the first to do it 2 years ago, and they went on to win the title that year. And now Goyang Sona going for their first title in their franchise history. Busan KCC, they're the first number 6 seed to make it all the way to the finals. We try to obviously become the first number 6 seed to win a title as well. Games 1 and 2 are in Goyang on Tuesday and Thursday. Games 3 and 4 in Busan on Saturday and Sunday. So back-to-back, games 3 and 4. And interestingly, these two stadiums are more than 400 kilometers apart, the longest distance ever between two venues in the championship final in KBL history. Sona have not yet lost in the playoffs. You know, they swept the Seoul SK Knights in the opening round, 3 straight games, and then defeated the defending champions, Changwon LG Sakers, in 3 straight. KCC have won 6 titles in 11 previous trips to the finals. They swung to DB Promi in the first round, knocking off Anyang Jeonggwanjang in the second round in the semifinals in 4 games.
So exciting. The KBL final, you know, really giving us a true underdog showdown. And we were actually lucky enough to speak to Goyang center Nathan Knight last week. So listeners, definitely go and have a listen to that interview if you want some insight into that incredible journey to the final for the Sky Gunners. Now, there'll be no shortage of star power in this series. So Jiho, who are some of the players to watch?
Yeah, obviously Nathan Knight will be one of them for Sona. You know, they're going to be also led by the reigning regular season MVP Lee Jung-hyun and the Rookie of the Year Kevin Kambau. And Knight and those two completes the they complete the big three for that team. Now KCC, they've got 4 former MVPs: Ho Hoon, Choi Jun-young, and Song Kyo-chang on the Korean side, and Sean Long on the foreign player side. Plus, of course, Ho Hoon's brother Ho Eun is an all-star himself. So that's a pretty stacked team also on paper. And KCC led the regular season by averaging 83.1 points per game. Sona ranked 4th in scoring, 79.2 points per game. They scored in different ways. You know, KCC, they score a whole bunch of two-pointers. In fact, over 65% of the shot attempts came from inside the arc. That's the highest rate in the KBL. Now, Sona, they fire about 49% of the shots from downtown. So they, you know, live by the three and die by the three. So it's going to be a pretty interesting series. They split the season series actually 3-3. So I think it's going to be a long, pretty closely contested final.
Well, really looking forward to following along. Turning to baseball now, the KBO League now has a new face atop the career hits leaderboard, and it's the ageless wonder Choi Hyung-woo of the Samsung Lions. Jiho, tell us more about his latest accomplishment.
Yeah, Choi had 4 hits on Sunday against the Hanwha Eagles to reach 2,623 for his career. He moved past Son Ah-sup of the Doosan Bears, who stuck at 2,622 and was actually sent to the minor league last week. So Son climbed to first place in the hits leaderboard back in June 2024, but his pace has really slowed in the past couple of years. He's been traded twice. He's only got 4 hits this season. Now, Che, he's the oldest hitter in the league this year. He's 42 years old. He's still playing at a very high level. and it seemed only a matter of time before he overtook Son in the hits leaderboard. He's also, Choi is also the all-time leader in doubles with 548, in RBIs with 1,758, and total bases with 4,483.
Another historic milestone for Choi, who just keeps adding to an already pretty historic resume. Finally for today, we're going to talk some badminton. Unsurprisingly, we can't talk badminton without mentioning world number one An Se-young. She was at it again, leading Korea to the world women's team title over in China on Sunday. Jiho, is she just unstoppable? I mean, tell us more about her dominant showing in Denmark.
Yeah, unstoppable, inevitable, basically, at this point. An Se-young led the way for Korea in a win over China in the final of the Uber Cup out in Denmark. That's the World Women's Team Championship in badminton. The Korea won 3-1 in the best of five final. The teams played a maximum of three singles and two doubles matches, and Korea didn't even need to get to the final singles match in the final. In the opening singles, An dispatched world number two Wang Ziyi of China 21-10 and 21-13. And, you know, An Se-young played all the opening match in all six contests for Korea at this tournament. She won all of them. Wow. Did not lose a game. In the final, she didn't even let Wang tie her at any point in the final. So she improved to 20-5 all time against the Chinese player who once lost to An in 10 straight matches, before actually beating her once earlier this season. Now, the doubles duo of Lee So-hee and Jung Na-eun lost to the top-ranked team of Liu Xiangxiu and Tan Ning in straight games. So the score was tied at 1-1. And then in the next singles match, world number 17 Kim Ga-eun upset number 4 Chen Yufei 21-19, 21-15. So in the next doubles match, Baek Hana, Kim Hye-jung closed out the victory by defeating Jia Yefan and Zhang Shushen 16-21, 21-10, and 21-13. So that clinched the championship for Team Korea.
An incredible showing from the Korean badminton players. And that's where we'll leave it for this week's sports roundup. That was sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News Agency bringing us the latest. Thanks so much, Ji-ho.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And that brings us to the end of today's Korea 24. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for more news, analysis and stories from Korea and beyond. I'm Alana Hill. Take care and goodbye.
What you're about to hear could save a life. These are step-by-step instructions for performing CPR, or cardiopulmonary resuscitation, a life-saving emergency procedure used when a person's heart is not functioning properly. First, if someone collapses and is unresponsive, ensure the scene is safe. Tap the patient's shoulder and shout, "Are you okay?" If the person remains unresponsive, if their breathing is abnormal, or if there are any signs of a seizure, immediately call 119 or your local emergency number or point out someone nearby to make the call. The faster you call, the better. You can also make a video call or send photos to the local emergency number. Start CPR immediately, rather than leaving the scene to find someone else for help or looking for a pulse. Place the heel of your dominant hand in the center of the person's chest. Place your other hand on top, keep your arms straight, and press hard and fast. Press hard and fast at a rate of 100 to 120 compressions per minute. That's the beat of Staying Alive playing right now. Push in at least 2 inches or 5 centimeters and allow the chest to rise fully between compressions. If you are not trained and are not confident in rescue breathing, continue hands-only CPR until emergency medical personnel arrive. Immediate CPR can help maintain blood flow to the brain and vital organs. Acting quickly may save a life. This has been a public safety message on CPR. KBS World Radio is committed to keeping our listeners informed and prepared because knowing what to do in an emergency makes all the difference. Stay safe, stay informed.